The second great master of Austrian economics after Karl Menger was Eugen von Bawerk. He became famous around the world for writing a devastating critique of Karl Marx's Capital in 1896, from which Marxists have never fully recovered. However, he is best known for his three-volume masterpiece, Capital and Interest, which includes, as the second volume, his Positive Theory of Capital. Von Bawerk's chief contribution to economic theory is his focus on time. Menger, in Principles of Economics, had emphasized the fact that production processes all take time. Von Bawerk, however, greatly expands on what Menger had to say. He develops the now fundamental concept of time preference, although I should note he never actually uses that phrase. That was originated by the American economist Frank Fetter, an honorary Austrian, so to speak, who later tweaked and refined some of von Bawerk's ideas about interest. Using this central idea of time preference, von Bawerk develops a complete theory of capital and interest, and along the way refutes both Marx's theory of exploitation and the old Christian idea of usury. To understand how he did it, let us imagine once again Robinson Crusoe alone on an island. Today, he's a fisherman. For the purposes of this video, fish is all he has to eat on the island, and also fish doesn't go off or he smokes it or something. I cannot think about best before dates. Assuming he actually wants a fish, if he is given a choice between a fish today and a fish in 1 week's time, what would Crusoe choose? He would, of course, choose the fish today. He has a positive time preference because humans in general prefer the present to the future. It is logically inconceivable for our time preference to be negative in general, because otherwise we'd all be dead. That is, we cannot constantly defer acting because we need to eat and drink. However, certain things might alter the time preference. How about 5 fish in 1 week? Crusoe might go for that, assuming he can survive the 7 days in between. However, whether he goes for it or not depends on his time preference, which might be high, that is, he wants things now and finds it hard to delay consumption, or it might be low, which is that he is prepared to sacrifice in the short term for the longer term gain. People have different time preferences as a matter of nature. Children, for example, have very high time preference. Many children would not take the 5 fish in 1 week. They'd want the 1 fish today. Also, other factors can affect time preference. Maybe Crusoe is a fish addict and he must get his fix right now. Maybe he's starving and cannot wait. Or maybe he saved up a stock of fish already and can afford to wait a week. However, the point is that no matter what his time preference, all other things being equal, he would prefer 1 fish now than in 1 week. We can easily see this if we attach money prices to the two propositions. He can buy a fish for 3 gold pieces or a futures contract for a fish in 1 week for 3 gold pieces. Virtually no one would take the futures contract at the same price. However, they might at a discounted rate. Anyway, our man Crusoe is currently catching fish with his bare hands. He can manage to catch 10 fish a day. He knows that if he were to make a net, he could double this amount, and if he were to make a boat, he could actually quadruple it. However, it takes 7 whole days to make a net. He can just about live on 5 fish a day, so he effectively saves the remaining 5 for a whole week. Now he has 35 fish on which to live for the following week, and so he can spend the whole week constructing the net. Now he can catch 20 fish a day, so it's only going to take him 4.5 weeks to save up the 70 fish he needs to survive the 2 weeks it'll take him to make the boat. And this, in a nutshell, is von Bawerk's positive theory of capital. Crusoe must save up fish by delaying consumption of them in order to invest his time in new methods of production. There are a few things to note here. First, it is of course important that the net and the boat yield a greater return of fish than the bare hands. Crusoe is not going to delay consumption to construct something that will not improve his lot. This is a small but very important point. There must be an incentive for capital accumulation and investment, otherwise there will be no innovation. This is one reason why socialist countries have had a hard time innovating in general. Second, notice the role of time preference. Let us say that Crusoe had a higher time preference and ate 7 fish a day instead of only 5. This would cost him around 10 extra days because he's consuming more and saving less. Of course, if Crusoe ate all 10 fish every day, that is if he had an extremely high time preference, he would be stuck at this subsistence level. This might seem very obvious, but it is a point all too often not grasped. The accumulation of wealth requires some degree of saving and investment prior to production, or else there is no moving forward. So, to sum up, the more roundabout production process of using the boat and the net cost Crusoe 350 fish in production in the short run. That's 70 fish by hand for the week it took to make the net, and 280 fish by net for the 2 weeks it took to make the boat. Those are the fish he could have been producing while he was constructing. However, in the long run, it saved him a lot of time and produced extra fish. The boat is 300% more efficient than using hands and 100% more efficient than using the net alone. Now he can feed himself for a whole week in just one day, freeing up time to spend on other things. In other words, despite his short-term pain, in the long run, he is much better off. So, more roundabout methods of production lead to greater productivity in general. But the capitalist must wait longer for the return on their investment. These are two crucial points. Bomberwerk also argues that between capitalists and labourers, the economic conditions are, with very few exceptions, extremely favourable to the effecting of exchange. The labourers urgently need present goods and cannot or can scarcely turn their own labour to any account. They will, therefore, to a man, rather sell their labour cheaply than not sell it at all. But very much the same is true of the capitalists. To see what he means, let's look at the individual incentives of the labourer and the capitalist. The labourer has a choice between simply going hungry, trying to make it on his own, let us say as a subsistence farmer, or working for the capitalist. Bomberwerk notes that in some times and in some places, for example in the USA during the time of its founding and expansion, many may opt to go it alone, that is, they may take the middle option here. But in very settled places, like old Europe, it is much more likely that working for a wage will represent the more attractive option. Now, let us look at the capitalist's incentives. He doesn't really want to let his money sit dormant. It's not doing anything but collecting dust and cobwebs if it's just sitting there. Being of low time preference, he'd prefer to set that capital to work somehow. He might make a greater return in the future by giving this man a job today. And so, in fact, very little capital just sits dormant in the coffers. Capitalists have an incentive to employ it to the most productive ends to maximize their returns. And so, there is a tendency for them to maximize employment. In fact, if more people turned up and there was just still money sitting idle, if they could, they'd likely employ them to get future returns. This is an important point because socialists tend to imagine that capitalists just sit on massive piles of cash, which they simply hoard, and this is seldom the case. Furthermore, Bomberwerk argue that this situation was not at all exploitative because of the different rates of time preference. The worker is paid up front, whereas the capitalist must wait to see a return. The worker wants the money today, whereas the capitalist is prepared to wait. Actually, this situation is preferable to the capitalist just going and blowing all their money on consumption, that is, just blowing it on goods and services. Why? Because if they just blew it, all that happens is that the various providers of those goods and services get a one-time payday. whereas if they employ workers directly, those workers will get paid week after week, so long as the firm stays in business. Of course, the capitalists may opt to invest in capital goods instead of labour. Note, should this be the case, the producers of those capital goods and their workers get a payday. But this brings us to a central problem over which Bombeverk pondered in much of his work. Let's take the example of this digger. This digger will produce a yield of 10,000 gold coins for the capitalist over the next 10 years. But its cost is only 8,000 gold pieces. Why would anyone sell this digger for 8,000 gold pieces when its yield is 10,000? Bombeverk's answer is that present goods are worth more than future goods of equal quality and quantity. Yes, we are right back to the fish. We prefer one fish today over one fish in 1 week. But we may also prefer to pay 2 gold pieces for the fish in 1 week versus 3 gold pieces for the fish today. And in exactly the same way, we may prefer to pay 8,000 gold pieces today for 10,000 gold pieces in the future. Why? Because the capitalist is not only having to wait, but also he forgoes 8,000 gold pieces worth of present goods and services for the prospect of 25% more of them in the future. In other words, the capitalist pays an opportunity cost in present goods when purchasing the digger, so it must be sold at a rate discounted from this total yield. We can see this even more directly in the case of interest on a loan. Let us say our worker wants to borrow 100 gold pieces today and then agrees to pay back 110 gold pieces in 3 months' time. In effect, he is buying 100 present gold pieces from the bank in exchange for 110 future gold pieces. The bank has a lower time preference than him and can afford to sit and wait for the interest. Well, I hope I've held your interest as you sat and waited through this video. Bombeverk paved the way for all later economists truly to understand the phenomenon of interest. I should say that if you really want to get into the weeds of the various debates between economists in the Austrian and the neoclassical traditions, you could listen to the 3-part series by Robert P. Murphy, which was presented on his podcast. Next time on Masters of Austrian Economics, I'll be looking at Ludwig von Mises. Now get out.
And a very special thanks to Stetson F. Lionel, The Ambivalent Onion, Christopher Scholholm, The Crimson Satyr, Chris, Kieran Haywood, Mr. A.M. Swainson, Radical Liberation, The Binary Surfer, Tragic Vision, Bailey and Aurora, Toyotomi Ami, Holy Spatula, Alexander, Froggy, Splice, Buckhegit Society, Michael Meir, J. Greenriver, Michael Tynan, Heronius Napalm V, Vincenzo Rapio, and Edward Darrow.